Earlier this week, I stopped by the American Visionary Arts Museum in Baltimore. The museum is an internationally known gem, and this Sunday is your last chance to see Human Soul and Machine, The Coming Singularity, AVAM's 19th original thematic exhibition. This incredibly important body of work looks at the serious impact technology has on our lives, as seen through the eyes of more than 40 visionary artists, cutting-edge futurists, and inventors. I began my journey with AVAM's founder and director, Rebecca Hofberger. We started our tour of the exhibition by looking at a series of large, colorful drawings depicting the story of Prometheus.
We have to begin with the story of the gift of fire, because absolutely there's no technology without fire. So we begin with the myth of Prometheus, which turns out to be dead on.
What do you mean it turns out to be dead on?
Well, we all know that Prometheus was a rogue god that pissed off all the other gods by giving an immature humanity the gift of fire. And what did that really mean? Let's back up and look at that. Well, before we had the gift of fire, we had to cuddle with our animals. We couldn't eat Fluffy, right? Because there's no fire. We can't cook them. If you have no fire, you have no electricity. So you had to go to sleep when the sun goes to sleep, and you have to rise with the light of the sun. You were a peer to creation versus being able to dominate it. Fire gives you domination. What's the other thing fire permits us to do? It permits us to smelt metals and to make swords and guns and tanks, and in the blink of an eye, the atom bomb. And it also lets us play with the chemicals. Without fire, you can't distill and make new human-made chemicals. And today, we have over 104,000 human-made chemicals that never existed on the Earth before, and for which our biology of living things have absolutely no resistance. So we've made it quite a toxic soup because of fire. And think of what was the punishment, you know this, for Prometheus, right? He had an eagle rip out his liver night after night. And because he was a god, it would regenerate and the eagle would come back out. And what does an eagle do for human beings? It acts as the filter to all the toxins. So it's like unbelievable to me that the ancients had that intrinsic wisdom that fire brought us to a level of toxicity.
And who wrote all this? Did you write this?
I did, and the fabulous artist Chris Roberts Antio in 1 week drew all this literally, like, and got it out. So we begin there. And then we turn to Eisenhower, who famously, in 1961, in his farewell address, warned his fellow Americans that a far greater danger than any outside source of threat was our own military-industrial complex. And he was the first person to put those two things together. Rumor has it that he originally said congressional. And they made him, I guess, because he's part of Congress.
Right.
Take that out. Ours is an exhibition that looks at the blessing and the peril of technology. All mighty powers can be used for good or for evil. And one of the great things about technology is the ability to communicate. I couldn't get you the Gutenberg press, but I got you this antique, and the phones and how quickly we have seen these kinds of phones. Remember when the cell phone first came out and whatever. So we go from there. And this is what I really want to introduce the show to. Our American Visionary Art Museum is a national museum, but I grew up next door here in Baltimore County to the head of Army Chemical Warfare. It was a lovely family. But Maryland has a disproportional role in weaponry, in the creative use of intelligence for weaponry that is unmatched anywhere else on the world. People don't realize Maryland has more PhDs who are residents and employed in the state of Maryland than California, New York, or Massachusetts.
Real numbers.
Real numbers, and that is because of the defense industry. Up in our stairwell, you see a two-story graph in colorful, silk colors to show how we spent the discretionary budget last year. And it's just the fact. We spent 57% of it, went straight to DOD work, defense work, and only 1% to food and agriculture.
This is the federal budget.
This is the federal budget, the discretionary part of the federal budget. So out of the 100 top U.S. defense contractors of the entire country, 70 of them are headquartered in the state of Maryland. So we have this obligation not to make an us-them mentality, but to really look at how we use this money and this investment. I would like it that when terrible threats to the world happen, like Fukushima, that because we've invested all this money and harnessed so much great creative, brilliant minds to it, they're like a SWAT team that responds. But when huge threats like Fukushima happen, I don't see us doing anything. And that makes me very sad. So I'm hoping that this exhibition really has served to make enrich the ethical dialogue of how and what we're doing with this vast capital and this vast intelligence. And again, I didn't want to demonize anyone. I used General Omar Bradley's quote, "Ours is a world of nuclear giants and ethical infants. We know more about war than we know about peace, more about killing than we know about living. We have grasped the mystery of the atom and rejected the Sermon on the Mount." And just like with Eisenhower, a lot of generals are the most articulate pro-peace people because they really get what comes out of war. So here, Hopkins, out of the top 10 universities in America that get defense budget money, Hopkins is by far number one. They get more than twice what number two gets. A few years ago, they got $1.9 billion. I think that has only grown. $1.9 billion a year. So we have this very unusual soup of people. We have Army Chemical Warfare is headquartered in here and always has been in Maryland. Army Biological Warfare up at Fort Detrick. And of course, Fort Meade is the biggest employer. So this Maryland is unlike any place in the whole world. This is where the cutting edge, and actually DARPA is just down the road in, in Virginia. So in fact, the science advisor to DARPA just came through here. And it's been very interesting, the very warm reception to look at. Senator Mikulski was one of the biggest proponents when she came over the Christmas holiday to see this show.
What did she say?
Well, she just loved that I put up the discretionary budget. I thought maybe she wouldn't, but she is just, she's a social worker to her core. And I think she realizes, what are we doing, So over here I have the positive aspects of application for healing. I mean, before that you had the first technology of a peg leg if you lost your leg in an accident, right? And they've gotten better, better, and better. But now we're getting, because of technology, the good part is that you could get a leg that could respond to your thoughts and move like a normal leg. But soon we will have legs that will be better than any human legs have ever been. So we're quickly going into what Ray Kurzweil, who was our honoree's a time of what's called the singularity. And believe me, there's a serious effort to upload what makes Mark Steiner, Mark Steiner, and nobody else in this whole world, with his sense of humor and his memories and his ability to continue to evolve, and to upload that into something, hardware, that will never get old or sick or die. That's kind of a scary proposition there.
It's frightening. It's like a vampire.
Well,
it never.
Well, mortality.
Dies, right?
That's well. Why do you think we're in an age, whether it was Ponce de Leon who wanted to, the Fountain of Youth, or the Bride of Frankenstein, et cetera, Frankenstein, this idea of trying to cheat, whether it's Lazarus or any of this, or vampires, this dance that human beings have always had, with trying to cheat mortality. And I think we're already immortal. That's my personal thing, that, you know, in God, I wouldn't want to be in one particular body for, like, ages. I mean, that would be my ideal of, you know, entrapment to the highest, you know. But this show does both playful things and very deadly serious.
I know you curate these things and work with people and come up with these ideas. Where did this idea come from in the beginning? How did this germinate, this idea that you, of this exhibit?
This show really came out of what a kind of Luddite I am. I mean, you know, you can't get things done in this world now unless you agree to participate in technology. Almost impossible. Right. And if I have to, I'm sure like everybody out there, memorize at my age one more darn, you know, username and password. I mean, I can't believe it. And for those of us headed towards some dementia, God help our kids put together where everything is, you know. So I really wanted to look at, I see technology as a power that amplifies on a level never seen before all the issues of privacy, and synchronistically, as is the want of this museum, when we come up with a theme, there's that echoing in reality. You know, what were the big news stories when this exhibition launched last fall? It was Edward Snowden. It was Chelsea Manning. It was WikiLeaks. We're in a time that I believe where anything that can be encrypted can be decrypted. The sanctity of leisure time. It may be great. I can do my job without my smartphone because I have no secretary. And it's just a great thing on so many ways. But it also means there's never a vacation. You're always accessible and bombarded. And then for privacy. So privacy, weaponry, quality of life, and what the new technologies will do. Thoreau said, "Lo, men have become the tools of their tools." And he didn't live into this age, so you can imagine. So let's go upstairs and see the rest.
We're always wired in.
Now, this is really important. You know how right now they have us all, like, totally enraptured with the newest technology? We've got to have the newest iPhone, whatever it is, et cetera. I have this commercial up here for Dorothy Gray makeup-removing cosmetics cream. And I put it up here because they actually spray the model with radioactive powder. So just so they can show you very proudly their atomic test to show that their cream removes makeup and dirt from the street 2.5 times better. See, that's a Geiger counter.
Oh, my God.
And they've sprayed her with that, you know. So you and I, Mara, we grew up with kids whose parents had been given, prescribed by doctors, DES. They could the children could never have children after that, or prescribed thalidomide. I mean, we know that mistakes get made. And now we're making new inventions at a level where we're making more, we're looking up at the wonderful, the Sims Corporation was so generous to give us tons of these gorgeous motherboards, which just as art look great to me, you know, the insides of computers that are so colorful. I wanted to show you, why would I put in a show on technology this giant, you know, aluminum foil, you know, a gorilla, right? And it's because at one point, not that long ago, did you know that the capstone to the Washington Monument is not gold or platinum, it's aluminum, because gold, aluminum was far more valuable than was, gold or platinum during the times of, let's say, Napoleon III. And when he had a huge banquet, he let all of his guests take home their chalice and their place setting. But the only the one or two mucky mucks could possibly take home because it was so hard to make and refine. But when the technology came in that figured out how to make aluminum very easily, overnight it becomes the stuff that you wrap around your hot dog and throw in the trash. So we're into an age with 3D manufacturing and I think molecular duplication where even gold, I think at some point things won't be that valuable. And what's great is that we have a chance to go back and understand humanly what are those eternal values that have always been the most valuable. I want to show you Alex Gray's painting that was made 12 years before 9/11 because it very clearly shows two airplanes over top of the Twin Towers. This is called Gaia, and on this level, this huge painting shows like Earth in balance and in harmony, and everybody's kind of a vegetarian and doing well. On this side, it's the corruption of what we've done to nature, and you see what we've done to the East River. And this was done, again, 12 years before, 9/11, and yet it shows clearly those two planes over the Twin Tower and the role of fire and just all the nuclear power plants going off, etc.
You're listening to my walkthrough of Human Soul and Machine, The Coming Singularity, the current exhibition at the American Visionary Arts Museum, right here in Baltimore. Sunday is the last day for this exhibition, and you don't want to miss this. We really don't. For more information, avam.org, avam.org. We'll be right back with more of this conversation in just a minute. On our way to break, we're hearing Katrina Clapp, Yasin Bey, Mos Def, about Hurricane Katrina, which started on this day in 2005.
And for me, for the creator. Chauncey, D.C., $1 per a human being. See that Katrina clap. See that Katrina clap. Listen, homie, it's dollar day in New Orleans. It's for the water, hey, when people dead in the street. And Mr.
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and you're listening to The Mark Steiner Show right here on WEAA 88.9 FM, celebrating the 88 days of summer. Details at WEAA.org. And that's Ubop Shabam by the great Charlie Parker. Charlie Parker was born on this day in 1920. We're listening this hour to an interview I did earlier this week with Rebecca Hofberger, American Visionary Art Museum's founder and director, in their exhibition about humans, technology, and the future of our world. This is your last chance to see that exhibition called Human, Soul, and Machine, The Coming Singularity. It ends this weekend. Here's more of our tour through the AVAM.
And here we have Kenny Irwin's work in
Kenny. Amazing.
He's back again.
Yes. And he is Maryland roots. I think his grandfather was Carol Rosenblum. And he's devout Muslim today and has been for a while. But he does, he draws with big pens what images he's seen in dreams, these kind of futuristic dreams where we've terraformed the moon and extraterrestrial cultures are now living amongst us very peacefully. And he does it with big pens. And inside we have a taste for his, what began as Robo Christmas on his parents', the property out in Palm Springs, and that is now the Robo Lights. And again, right, we're passing next to Adam Kurtzman's great Bride of Frankenstein, because she reminds us of the, you know, of the quest human beings have always had for immortality, which is now probably one of the most best-funded things. You have Itzkoff's money in that, and many people affiliated with Ray Kurzweil. We have four of the sacred mirrors of Alex Gray, and this will be the very last time that the mirrors are not shown, all 21 of them together. So let's go in and we'll hear this Arabic Christmas music. And these are called nutcrackulators. They are real nutcrackers that he's put through the microwave and then adorned sculpturally with each one in their own wild way. And you know what I'm touched by? Do you both remember when you were little, did you have the, for even my dad who passed away last year at 100, we were told you cannot come to school unless you have two number two pencils.
Right.
Remember that?
I do remember that.
Okay. Well, guess what the big, you know, future hope is for generating current and conductivity of current in the most efficient way? Two Russian scientists got the Nobel Prize. They expatriated and moved to University of Manchester in England. And what's amazing is they took a piece of scotch tape on the end of a pencil, and they were able to stabilize one molecule thick of graphite and made graphene. And graphene is this miracle substance that we all held in our hands, called stronger than a diamond, more flexible than rubber, mind-bogglingly conductive, and an elegant one atom thick. We should be able to have cell phones when they stabilize graphene that will go for long, long periods of time, that will be the thickness of a piece of paper. And with the stability that we'll be able to, wrap them, bundle them up, put them in our jeans, forget they're in there, wash them, throw them in the washer and take it out, and it will work. I just wanted to show that the wonder of this world is that there can be miracles underneath our feet, literally, and we search so much outside, and yet here, you know, graphite to graphene is so exciting to me.
Thank you.
This is made by a school teacher who lived near Three Mile Island back in 1979 when there was a meltdown. Now, what it was made from, this is not normally, he wasn't an artist, but did you know there was a total media blackout for the people who lived around Three Mile Island? Who knew? And so his brother calls from Vermont, seeing on the national news that there's been this incident, which was never, ever fully reported, and said, hey, you know, oh my God, are you all right? And he says, what do you mean? And when the school teacher who lived in the shadow of this place found that out that there would be a blackout, he was so furious, you know, that there would be such a thing. So he made this, he took a vending machine, and he made this wonderful, his name is Charles Roy Fender, he made like a fake urine in a vending machine as if it was some inside of, you know, that people could pass their tests, that they weren't really, you know, filled with radiation and, you know, other accoutrements to pass a test. Because he just thought, like, how could they have done that? And it's very interesting. My daughter was born in 1979, but she was born to me down in Mexico. But we would come back a lot. But her best girlfriends, the level of Hashimoto's from those kids, even in Maryland, born in 1979, I wish somebody would do an epidemiological study on those 1979 babies within 150 miles of Three Mile Island, because I think there was a lot more radiation, because the incidence of thyroid disease and Hashimoto's is off the chart. Her dearest girlfriend, Shelby, was the youngest person on record to have full-blown Hashimoto's when she was like 5. Wow. You know, so it's stuff. So here is the world we're in, and where are we going? This is a wonder person who I wish he would have just loved you so much, Mark. This is the work of a man who grew up one of three boys in a very poor mining town down near the Kentucky border, but in Virginia, Clintwood. And his dad was a farmer, but he was also the lay lawyer representing the coal miners for grievances against the coal companies. And he said, you know, we were all needed as boys to work, but we knew how to play music, we knew how to build our own instruments, and before we even ever went to school, we knew how to help birth animals, and we knew how to fix things. He said, but the children coming today are going to feel useless because they don't know how to, when their computer breaks, they don't know how to fix anything. They don't feel needed. And what will happen, he says, is you'll have he said this in like 1960, the next generation will see an unprecedented level of drug addiction, he said, because they're only being raised to be consumers. And the kicker is there aren't going to be enough jobs. So he said they will feel so...
When did he say this?
Like 1960, and there's a painting he did at the time from the early 60s called Cocaine Baby. And I mean,
Cocaine Baby in 1960.
And when I went to Clintwood, there's like a methadone clinic in every tiny town. And I thought, how do drugs even get in this gorgeous, you know, voluptuous coal mining country? So he
did all of this?
Everything you see on this one, this 10-foot statue, is from one piece of tree. And it is a human being anguished on this side, and all those serpents are made from honeysuckle vine. And coming around on the other side, it's a robot. And he called it the final battle. The other thing is he became, and you'll love this, he became a father for the first time at age 72. And he had two daughters. I know you'd appreciate that. And he did his young wife was so bright. She was the brightest person in the town. And he just loved her so much and his daughters. And at 72, he called this work, inspired by her pregnancy, Behold My Miracle. And then he appreciated who his parents and the Native Americans were. But his worldliness was really quite something. I'll show you in a minute an example of that. But this is a statue called Quo Vadis. And Quo Vadis is Latin for where are we going? And you can see the heart and the hand up in the top there. And it poses that question. So over here, we have, he was a great admirer of Dr. Martin Luther King and of Albert Einstein. And I have the quote from Einstein, technological progress is like an axe in the hands of a pathological criminal. And the very last...
The technology overlaps with our humanity. It's appallingly obvious our technology has exceeded our humanity.
That's when Einstein was still, but he, of course, he witnessed the atomic age. So over here.
Lenin too? Is that Lenin?
Yeah, you know what is so funny? Isn't that a gorgeous picture of Lenin? He said, oh my gosh, everybody's going to think I'm a commie. He said, I'm not. I just thought that Lenin had the most interesting head. So I love it. So he put it in there because I thought he did such a good job. Remember, this is all our artists are like self-taught. This last work that's incomplete, this is what kind of humanitarian Fred Carter was. It's called The Trek of the Kurds, because he said he couldn't believe that human beings would use biological warfare on men, women, and children.
The Trek of the Kurds. And when did he die?
The late 80s is when he went.
This is before Iraq.
Saddam Hussein used the biological weapons. Right. But we actually supplied that. I mean, it was bought from us, and that's something we have to, without blame, I really want this show to serve as, truth and reconciliation time. This is a statue that he did about 6 feet tall of a Biafran mother and child. And there you can see that cocaine baby early painting. So this is a man in the middle of nowhere who was very well-read, understood about what it is to be a human being on the face of this earth, and lived so gently. He was very beloved by many people. I want to show you this piece. His dear friend was named Kat. It was an older woman who was raising in the poor Clintonwood area two generations of kids, and she became the first woman miner as a grandmother. And at first, the men hated her. They didn't want a woman in the mines, but she outworked them all, and besides, she would go home and make them birthday cakes. And she became the most beloved person from that whole community in the mines. But guess what? It was always cheaper for the mining companies to pay fines for all the grievous things that they weren't repairing that made it a dangerous work, condition for the miners. It was cheaper to pay the fines than to do the repair work. So they would just pay the fines and go on. And a blast here behind, you can see his collage, took 197 people from this tiny town, and he said they were murdered. And his dear friend Kat was amongst them, and that's what she looked like when they found her body.
So he did this collage?
He did everything you see in this room.
How did you find him?
I had found him and knew about him for about 4 or 5 years before I did the show, and I knew I was going to do the show in technology, and I like having a balance of voices, and I thought his was the most articulate visually and from what he understood about technology that I wanted it to make the balance. And you see it's the colors I chose was the heaven, the greens and the blue, the balance of heaven and earth, and then the red for the warnings. And then finally, he was such an admirer of Rachel Carson, who wrote, Silent Spring. Uh-huh. And do you remember what she said in this wood carving? You can see the knees of this sculpture are all rotted out in the bone marrow. And this was inspired by Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, where she said, we are breathing, drinking, eating in to the very marrow of our bones all these toxins. We're bringing them into our cells. And I think, and he shows no arms. That's a helpless figure. And then we always used, different great minds who give us great quotes. I love this poem. Do you want to read it?
Sure. Modern Technology Owes Ecology an Apology. Alan Edison.
I think that's pretty well true.
Where does this stuff live when it's not here, this stuff?
I had to gather it from different places, and mostly the wonderful wife, the widow, and his two daughters. The daughters are really the owners of almost every piece here, and they loved having it here. I tell you, this man was a true, compassionate visionary. He understood where we were going, and he cared about that. So around the corner, we do use David Knopf's chair, who is a local, a wonderful craftsman, so people can sit down. He does this wonderful curved plywood. I give a little shout out to David Knopf, who was kind enough to donate that to the museum. We're very proud to have it. This is such an important work. The man's name he took is called Rigo 23. He's from Portugal, and a very gentle man, and he was very worried about drones. And Maryland, again, plays a disproportionate role in the conception and manufacture of drones. And without trying to in any way demonize what people do, we wanted to point out several things about drones, just to raise the discussion. And that is, we all know about Sun Tzu, you know, who wrote The Art of War that gets used by Napoleon and modern war colleges. But something that Sun Tzu wrote really stayed with me. And he said the highest form of warfare is when you conduct a war so that your enemy doesn't even know it and you win your objective. And we're coming into an age of stealth like never before. And where we could engineer a virus and project it somewhere and contain it so it wouldn't go nova around the world, but then wipe out huge populations and then go, oh, our hearts go out to the poor people of wherever. And we could have, it's in our capacity and other people's capacity as well now to do that kind of weaponry. So we have these great powers, but we don't have the evolution as a species. So what's interesting is Isaac Asimov wrote three laws of robotics in his science fiction work years ago, and they basically come down to one law, that no human being should ever build a robot capable of killing or injuring another human being. Because if you do, you've thrown the gauntlet down that someone else will just build a bigger one, and then it goes on and on until human beings have been eclipsed by these techno wars that are more lethal than amongst all the terrible things we've done. Rigo brought up a story that I've confirmed, that there was an Afghani shepherd, very beloved, very gentle man, who had 200 sheep, and he would get up before dawn every day to take the sheep up the mountainsides before the sun rose, so they wouldn't have to trek up to the good pastures, you know, under the heavy sun. And he would do this all the time. And then he would take them home when the sun went down in the early evening, so that they were always, you know, walking up and down in the cool of the day. But our drones come over. All they register are 200 heartbeats going in formation up the mountain and kill very, very efficiently every one of the 200 sheep and the old man. So it's a very scary time. The original drawings of Temple Grandin for humane slaughter.
Uh-huh.
You know, that wow. There's a lot more than I can show you at one time, but I would like to finish with a local work of art that was actually in last year's show that we've just been gifted by the local Apache elder, wonderful artist, Judy Tallwing, and it's called Prayer for Peace. Let me show that to you. And I do so just as we're passing by with Martine Rothblatt, who became a huge fan. She said this was the best exhibition she ever saw, and she came back 5 times to read every word. Martine is the great inventor of Sirius Radio, a lawyer, a humanitarian. We also, you know, Godzilla with the new movie. It was very funny. That's Mrs. Godzilla, which grew out of the Japanese imagination to cope with what had happened in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So we'll go over this way. This show is only up to the last day, the Sunday of August. So we hope you will come out and bring people you love. But what I wanted to point out about this that will stay as part of our permanent collection, it's called Prayer for Peace, and it's a very large work, and it took Judy Tallwing 7 years to make it, because people come to her all the time and ask them her to pray on behalf of, you know, their dog, their grandma, themselves, whatever. And each one of these little prayers, which she encourages people to touch, which is very rare in a museum, these tiny, tiny prayer birds, it took her 7 years because they had to be attached to a sincere prayer for someone else. And all of these have the power in them of some prayer she made on behalf of someone else. But she calls it Prayer for Peace, and she has the doves and the hawks together because she said, unlike in our culture, she said hawks to the Apaches are messengers of gods. They're not warbirds. But she said, in order for us to achieve peace on this earth with our families, our local communities, and in the world, these are stealth bombers down here and here, hidden in the painting in a very stylistic way. Judy says, for us to achieve that peace, we have to rise above all the stealth or secret ways that we hurt one another. Oh, that was like the most amazing thing.
Let's talk before we have to stop. I mean, just about for you, artistically and spiritually and in terms of this the kind of social and societal importance of this exhibit, I mean, how would you tie it together for people? I mean, what is it, what are you, in the deepest moments in this exhibit, what are we saying to people?
What we're saying is that the new technologies are so complex and so vast that the old rules are being eclipsed, and that we need to come together on that there are no more sides. We're one humanity going to be affected, whether we like it or not, whether we're living off in the woods, the air quality, the soils, the just life in general, beyond that transcends politic, are changing at a level never seen before because of technology and how we have become such a consumer and waste-oriented society. So it's a really gentle show, and I'm hoping smart people in the next generation will make better choices than have our current and previous generations. And this show has been sent as a real love song to people, to just, not to preach, just to look at what is happening. Because again, these new technologies, I mean, who would have, remember when it came out that every single telephone call is being recorded, and they're going, oh great, can you imagine how many boring things, how many teenagers listening, you know, going on about something that somebody has to, like, you know, that is being recorded. But we never had the technology to even begin to do that. We have it now. So that means if somebody in some future time decides they don't really like Mark Steiner, the access to anyone you had ever had a conversation with who might think of helping you or whatever is all been is reaccessible, let's put it that way. So we have to become better people. And this is a show that prays for that.
Rebecca, you bring so much. I mean, this museum has brought so much to all of us. It
is
has.
Is that Baltimore's Best? Did you see that again?
Well, you have. I mean, this is just, I think people understand the gem we have that is right here. Mm-hmm. This worldwide, this world-class international gem is in our world right here, just right here.
Mark, when we first opened this exhibition, what was amazing was a British critic said, perhaps it is the most important exhibition anywhere of the last decade. And that meant a lot. I mean, it really, this is a human issue. It's not an American issue. It's not a Baltimore issue. But Maryland does have a disproportionate responsibility in my book because so much is classified here, but is funded. Our livelihoods are here. I can't imagine if, you know, DOD stopped funding everything, what the economy of Maryland would disproportionately collapse. There's no question. And I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying, is there not a higher use to the gathering and the funding of so much creative intelligence?
I mean, when you think about just the exhibit here, when the piece on the drones, I mean, people look at drones as just a technology that should never have been made. However, it's not the technology, because drones can be used for wonderful things.
Yeah.
Drones can be used for mapping the world, understanding what things are in danger and how to save them. It can be used for saving people's lives who are stuck, finding where people are, for myriad things. It's not just made to be a bomb.
Absolutely.
You know, that's what I'm saying. People don't realize that it's how we use this technology.
It's not just technology. Our American Visioning Art Museum from day one has every year picked one grand powerful subject that has always had the potential to both bless or devastate. And if you think of love, error and eros, love profane and divine, or touch, you know, touch can be the most healing, kind, loving, spiritual thing in the world. It can be the most debasing, destructive, horrible thing in the world. Everything is intention. This show is a cry for a higher level of communal intention.
Headbone connects to the neck bone, neck bone connects to the arm bone, arm bone connects to the hand bone, hand bone connects to the internet, connected to the Google, connected to the government.
That was my conversation from earlier this week with Rebecca Hofberger, the American Visionary Arts Museum founder and director. We took a tour through their current exhibit, Human, Soul, and Machine, The Coming Singularity. And your last chance to see this powerfully important exhibition is this Sunday. Information about this exhibition and AVAM at avam.org. For more information about the songs you heard this hour, please visit steinershow.org. Coming up right after the break, we learn about the Black August Film Festival taking place this weekend in Baltimore. And we'll be right back with more of The Mark Steiner Show after the news and these messages. On our way to break, we're hearing I'm Digging You Like an Old Soul Record, Michelle Nade Ocello, who was born on this day in 1968.
Sit back, relax, and listen to the A-track, Dig You Like an Old Soul Record.
Yes, I'm digging you. Dig it like an old soul record, baby.
Just sit back, relax, and listen to the A-track. I dig it like an old soul record. Remember back in the day when everyone was black and conscious, down for the struggle. And that brought us all together. Sit back and talk, cultivating a positive vibe. Blue lights in the basement. Freedom was at hand and you could just taste it. It was so cool.